The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's the Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
Just a tick too late, Scott.
No, that was perfect, please.
It's that time. We're back again on the Sour Hour. It's been a little while, I feel like.
It has been. Too long.
Yes. We're on the Brewing Network. I'm your host, Jay. Here in the beautiful Brewing Network studios in downtown Concord. Bevo in the house. Hey, Bevo.
Hello.
Hi, Bev.
Nice Bevo's to see going you. To New Orleans soon. It's very exciting.
We leave on Saturday.
Going to go to the museums, it sounds like. And that's it.
Just yeah, that's culture. It. That's all we're going to do. Just none of that alcohol. Yeah,
just a healthy, as Justin used to say, granola weekend.
Yeah.
It's all about learning.
Yes.
I have some biographies you can read and documentaries
that
you can watch while you're there.
Actually amazing.
That other voice you hear is Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going good, man. I'm stoked to be here today with today's guest.
In studio guests, Beachwood Blendery, both Ryan and Harrison are here. Thank you guys for being here.
Yeah, stoked we can make it in-house.
Yeah.
It's fun.
The trek up the coast. How's your visit to the Bay so far?
Good, as always. A nice change of pace on the weather. Like, walked out of the plane and was just like,
Well, welcome to Concord.
Yes. The Brewing Network Studios is happy to have you.
Did I hear a phone?
It's the house phone.
No, it's probably someone calling us. You can call us. Ask these guys some questions about their great beer. 888-401-BEER is how you do that. You can join us in the chat. Email us in between shows, during the show. Scott@thebrewingnetwork.com, Jay@thebrewingnetwork.com. You can watch us live. We're on TV, thebrewingnetwork.com/TV. Is that good? Or are we on Twitch?
No, no Twitch.
We're on Twitch? Okay.
No, that has not happened.
I was on Twitch last weekend.
Oh, what were you doing?
For my great win in Nevada.
What was being broadcast on Twitch?
My poker game.
Oh, from the yeah. Vegas.
We just talked about this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't know if there was actually maybe they're doing some beer award ceremony on Twitch. I wasn't really sure.
Scott,
you're talking about your run at the No Limit table
Scott
at the Bellagio.
Steered me to a hot table. Give me a hot tip.
Game selection, man. Game selection's huge.
I got in there and got out with a few greenbacks.
There you go. Jay's been tuning into twitch.tv/stoneslivepoker.
Yeah.
Learning all about strategy, and he put it to use and ran it up.
I like it. Yeah. I don't know what those words mean, but yes, that's what I did. All in. That's all I know.
Call.
Yeah. So you can also, you're watching live already, but later or concurrently.
If only you were good at talking as you are at playing poker.
I know,
can
right?
Can you imagine how good
All
the show
in.
Would be?
Concurrently, you could be listening live. The Brewing Network app, just search BN Mobile in the search bars of things. Subscribe to the show and leave feedback on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app or wherever you do that kind of thing. And do we have... By the way, does Bevo has new glasses? Throwing me off a little bit.
Oh, they're so terrible. They're just reading glasses. I just bought them online. I didn't think they were going to look like this from the picture online. But I need them to see, so I'm just going to work with them until
you're
I get
go with
ones.
It. Yeah.
So the dorkiness is
return policies are not a thing.
Not intentional. Yeah.
No, not when I tore that package open the way I did.
Oh, yeah.
You have some good-looking glasses, Beav. Did you break them or lose them or why?
No, they're too strong. They're just reading glasses, but they're too strong and they make me sick.
It's no good. Speaking of being made sick,
yeah,
let's look at our reviews.
Okay, yes. I'm about to puke reading Humbletron's review. Humbletron's review is titled Praise, Humble Brag, and Suggestions. I'm resending my review without what tender sensibilities may consider crass language so as to make it onto the review list. Well, you've done so, Humbletron.
Good job.
I'm sitting on my back porch here in coastal Louisiana, which in summer is like sitting right next to the barbecue pit.
That's New Orleans.
Sampling a one-year-old rare barrel blonde base fermented with 1318 primary and East Coast Sen Valley blonde secondary. The keg was also dosed with port wine, soaked light toast white oak spirals. I owe this fantastic beer to you all. Cheers. The show single-handedly amplified my sour beer game. Many thanks. I started off listening to the session, but the overserved slow motion dumpster fire at the end of every show always lets me down. Not so with the Sour Hour. Pants on Backwards by Downright. The song's 20-second intro is what I can hear y'all bring back from break. Also, Three Fingers by Rival Sons. 30-second intro builds nicely. You're welcome. Chris Humble, head home brewer at Directional Brewing.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the crit.
And that's
the,
a couple of rejoiner suggestions. And we encourage you to leave some feedback so you can have your hilarious review read on the air. And also, we'll play your song just like this.
This is Three Fingers by Rival Sons. Yep. Already liking it.
Mm-hmm.
Got some head nodding going on here. Oh, yeah. I'm Jay Goodwin, and welcome back to the Sour Hour.
Welcome back.
Yeah, fermenting things and barrels. Uh-huh. Sound good?
Yeah, let's keep going a little bit longer. Let's see how it goes. I'm good.
Not that this is a good rejoiner, but did you guys know that the song Red Red Wine is originally by Neil Diamond?
Really?
Gullible much, Scott?
No.
No, it's absolutely true.
Gullible's not in the dictionary.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Yeah, that sounds wrong.
This 100% truth. According to my husband, who knows a lot about music.
Sam edited the wiki page himself.
And also, according to the internets.
Yeah, we're going to have to look into that.
I mean, yeah.
Let's look into that during the break.
Yeah, you know, that maybe for more information with Beverly Moore, we can
confirm. Oh, yeah, that's your show one for more information.
I got it.
And now, quickly, here's one of the other suggestions.
But don't be biased, though. You know, don't for... Because confirmation bias is like you look at one thing. And then you're like, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, totally. It confirmed what I already thought, so it has to be right. So here's one of the other suggestions. Got a little punk rock vibe going.
See this coming back from the session.
This I was going to say. It sounds like a session rejoin.
Yeah.
All right. Good suggestions, though, dude. At least one of them was. And again, thank you. Thank you for the review, brother. We appreciate it a lot.
All right. What else? Top of the show stuff. Last show, we had Creature Comforts on. Great stuff.
Blake.
And let's see, what else? Rare Barrel stuff. Been going to a lot of festivals since last show. Voodoo Brewery out in Pennsylvania. Perennial in Missouri. Trillium, Massachusetts. All great times. Thank you guys for coming up and saying hello if we were out for those festivals. One thing I wanted to say that, you know, we get questions about quite a bit, which is the Rare Barrels Beer Club.
Sold out.
But guess what? A little bit different this year. Membership costs $200 with tax plus tax, and it comes with awesome benefits. Here's a big change. 8 bottles, 2 of each, down from our customary 10. You notice we dropped the price, too.
What was the price before?
$300.
Mm.
And then we're kind of trimming it, listening to our current members' feedback, and just kind of making it, I mean, it's really like barely different, but a lot more affordable. So you're going to get 8 bottles, 2 of each, 4 different brands created exclusively for the ambassadors. You as a member will have access to purchase the most limited release and public bottles online. Get 10% discount both online in the taste room and in the kitchen, which is wonderful if you haven't been to the Rare Barrel in person. You also have the option to store your beer at the brewery for an extended period of time. Although if you pick it up, I can make more beer.
Totally. FYI. I mean, not that extended. Pick up your beer, please.
Pretty extended, actually. So that's nice if you make a few trips out to California during a year. Pick up your own beer, assign a trustee, or have it shipped anywhere in California. You also have access to purchase limited Ambassadors of Sour only merchandise online, as well as purchase tickets to our great events throughout the year. If you want to learn more, visit our website, therarebarrel.com.
Sold out. So we are checking out currently this Funky Blonde from Rheingeist. Nick and Luke sent us a nice care package here and a handwritten note. It's the fourth installment in our Outer Reaches series. Luke specifically asked to make sure y'all get a bottle. So We did get the bottle, and yeah. we got it in our glasses, and Ryan and Harrison have it in their glasses as well. This is a terrific beer, isn't it? Boy,
very
you guys
cool.
are killing it
like
out there.
I like that label, too.
Yeah,
it's
I'm digging
cool.
it for sure. Clean.
It's very cool. So I will not do what we did with Yeast of Eden, where we drink other people's beer only.
We're not going to do that?
No.
This That's is, how we treat our guests, though.
Usually, yeah, we just drink other people's beer. I can probably find some cans and bottles and stuff in the cooler if you
okay,
guys want
good.
To drink other
yeah.
people's beer.
Yeah, let's do it.
So anyway, thanks, Nick and Luke and Ryan, guys. You guys are making some awesome, awesome sour beer, man. Keep it up.
Yeah, very cool. While we're thanking people, I want to thank one of our great sponsors, Dr. Lambic, and his team at Sour Beer Blog. Mm. Check out the articles on Sour Beer Blog. I'm sure you guys already have, but you know what? Double check for a great written resource devoted to teaching you how to brew and blend sour beer at home. Now, get this. Sour Beer Blog crew is opening up a new brewery and taproom in central Pennsylvania. Check them out. Mellow Mink Brewing. That's the name at Mellow Mink.
They seem to almost be done. I was texting with him last week. I saw a Twitter post or something where they were like, it's September's the month. We're almost done.
Wow.
And
that's cool.
I was like, send me a picture of the completed tap room. He's mm-hmm. like, I'm saving that reveal.
I'm not friends with you anymore.
anyway, so they're right on the cusp. So if you're hearing this, they probably are either right about to be open or maybe they just opened, but they are right there. Dr. Lambic's been busting his butt over there trying to get this thing built, and they're right there.
Speaking of things coming out and being opened, let's maybe open our first Beechwood beer.
Oh,
is
yeah.
this beer out today? Is that what I heard?
Which
Not
one?
That one.
No, that
Not
was a beer that I didn't bring. This oh, is the this is Umiboshi. So it is a blend of Lambic-inspired barrels about 1 year old, and we add 3 pounds per gallon of fresh local plums and then a little bit of sea salt in right before packaging. The idea is that it's kind of inspired off of the Japanese salted plum, which is called umiboshi.
How would you describe your Sour and Wild program over there at Beechwood Blendery?
So Beechwood Blendery is a part of the... of Beechwood, which is also makes a lot of clean beer and has been
some of you
open
may have
for
heard of that.
Open for a while, and so the blendery is a part of that. It's a dedicated barrel facility where we are really just focused solely on trying to recreate the flavors that you find in traditional lambic and goose. That's really been our main goal and our focus this whole time. We like just really love that style and think it's kind of the pinnacle of beer in the world, really, and especially of sour beers. So we thought that in order to really be able to accomplish this goal, we really just wanted to dedicate our whole energy to it. So we really only make one beer on brew day. It's a lambic inspired base beer, and everything kind of starts out the same way, and we're just really hyper focused on this goal right now, and we'll see where we end up eventually, but that's been our main project. Just trying to recreate these flavors. So everything starts as a lambic-inspired base beer, and then we blend and do cool experimental stuff afterwards. But all the base beer is pretty similar and really focused on that.
Cool. And how long have you guys been at it?
We've been brewing now for about 3.5 years and also experimenting with spontaneous fermentation. We've only had the cool ship now for about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're finally at the point now where we can blend 1, 2, and 3-year-old barrels, which is exciting because obviously we're trying to go for creating flavors that you find in traditional goose. So really, we've been doing this project for a long time, but we're really about to release our first like real beer. Like that's the goal of the Beechwood Blendery. So it's pretty exciting times for us right now.
So if you've had Beechwood Blendery beer before, it is not real beer.
Well, that's it hasn't been up till now. Yeah. But it's about to be real.
It's about to be
yeah.
very
it's
real.
It's about to get real.
And Ryan Harrison, what do you guys do at the blendery? What are your individual roles?
My title is barrel keeper. Basically, just any cellar work or barrel moving. Yeah, it entails a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a two-man brew team. Like, just me and Ryan, for the most part. We do get help with packaging and some other small tasks and fruiting as well. But mainly it's just us two kind of like working as a team, knocking everything out.
Very vague. Ryan,
yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, we basically, both of us has to kind of wear all the hats. But when it comes down to it, Harrison does most of the work making the beer. He's cranking that out. And my title is head brewer and blender. So I've been there since the beginning. It used to be just me at the beginning, basically doing it all until got Harrison brought in like 2.5, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm just in charge of making sure everything happens, beer gets made, and it tastes good.
And, you know, we talked about the base beer you're making, and including the beer that came out the other end, which is this one here. And you mentioned a few times lambic inspired. I think you made a point to mention that a few times. What does that mean to you? Because I know on the show and in general in sour beer circles, we talk about kind of the nomenclature of how we talk about sour beers that maybe go up to the edge of the traditional Belgian beers. Why do you call it that? And what does that mean to you?
Yeah, this is definitely a really important topic to me and something that I always try to drill into people's heads and just always bring up anytime I'm talking about our beer, is that we don't make lambic and we don't make goose. In order to do that, you need to be in Belgium. You need to be certified by Hural. You need to do it traditionally in a certain region of Belgium. What we make is lambic-inspired beer, goose-inspired beer, or beer that's inspired by the Belgian lambic tradition. If we really want to get lengthy with it, which we have no problem getting lengthy with our names and other stuff. But
the show is explicit now.
Yeah. It's just really important to me to be respectful of the tradition. The Belgians, I think, are happy with us trying to recreate these flavors and aromas, and they're happy that Americans are getting so excited about their beer, and really there's this like kind of resurgence. But I think the one thing they're trying to hold on to is that term lambic and goose, and it's really important to them, I think, to help make sure people remember the history, the tradition, where it came from, because I think Americans a lot of times can get a hold of something and change it and then forget history a little bit or try to rewrite history a little bit. And I think the Belgians...
That's never happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think giving the Belgians this thing that and being respectful of it is important, because it's their way of maintaining the history and the tradition and making sure people remember and understand where it came from. And I think education is really important. So anytime I'm talking about our beer, even in a conversation, I always try to add inspired every time I use the word lambic or goose. And I think it's just important to me. I think the Belgians appreciate that and us talking about it as much as possible, because at the end of the day, we do not make lambic and we don't make goose, just like people in America aren't making champagne.
Let's talk about this beer that's in front of us, the salty plum inspired beer. Where do you guys get the plums? How do you process them? Why salt? When do you add that? How close to packaging?
I'll let Harrison.
This is great, by the way.
Oh, it is awesome.
All the fruit we get is like locally sourced, you know, just a couple hours away from the brewery. We typically get it a couple days after it's picked off the trees. We really like to let the fruit like sit and ripen fully before we process it. Basically, we want it to the point where we can crush it in our hands. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it feels good and smells good.
Yeah, I don't need the motion.
I know, I do weird hand things. Anyway.
I went with that.
He's notorious for that.
Brewingnetwork.com/TV.
It's like working a stress ball over there.
Yeah, just...
That's one way of putting it.
Yeah. We'll just go with that. So we put all of our fruit in new barrels. We find that we get a lot of more like complexity barrel to barrel, and also it helps blow off sulfur. We do leave headspace in the barrels when we fruit. This is just to keep the beer in the barrels and not have the fruit spray out everywhere. And after a month or so, we'll top the barrels up, and it kind of acts as like a punch down and kind of mixes everything up and make sure we get full extraction. And they'll sit for like one more month, and we'll go through and taste them, make sure there's no immediate like off flavors or problems. We'll go into a fermenter, settle the fruit out for a week. We crash to like 45 or so, and all the fruit settles out really nicely in the cone. It's not much waste or loss typically. Go to the bright tank, and that's where we'll add the sea salt on packaging day. Package a little bit warmer than probably most people do. We go about 55, just to speed up conditioning. Yeah.
How much salt? And how do you determine how much salt?
How much salt?
How much salt? I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. We do dose everything prior to blending.
Like a pinch per barrel, 2 pinches per barrel, or?
It's a couple grams.
A skosh.
Per barrel. It's not a ton of salt. We'll just put it in hot water, dissolve it, and just add it along with our bottle conditioning yeast and sugar.
The idea with the salt is we didn't want it to be salty, but we wanted it just to change the perception in the mouthfeel and kind of, I think the salt lets the flavors kind of linger a little longer on your palate and just kind of like really transitions it across your whole palate and gives it just a different kind of texture and a different kind of feeling, I think, is the main purpose of the salt. It doesn't really taste salty per se.
Well, it's pretty much the that's what you use salt for on food, right? It just kind of amplifies the flavor of the food rather than being its own flavor.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes it taste more like it. Yeah. What it's supposed to taste like. Yeah. Yeah, this beer is super good. I wish it was my beer and not yours.
maybe you should, I'll do what Jay normally does when the beer is really excellent. Don't enter this, please. Don't enter this.
Yeah, we've already talked about it.
Oh, really? What category are you entering again?
Salt beer. Category 168.
Japanese-inspired.
Don't look it up. Just enter it. They won't disqualify you.
I'll add one more thing. All of our beers, we really strive for balance and complexity, but also drinkability. So when I'm making a beer, I want people to be able to sit there and really analyze it and pick it out, or if they want to, just drink it and enjoy it and kind of have both of those options. So yeah, we really strive for balance on acidity, funk, fruit flavor. I don't want people to not be able to tell our beer from fruit juice. I'd like them to definitely be able to tell that it's beer. So the fruit character is definitely there, but you're going to be able to pick up the base beer underneath. We want there to be funk and acidity, so we don't want people to just get hit over the face with anything. We want there to be all these different things that you can sit there and enjoy and kind of pick out. So I think balance and drinkability is huge on all of our beers.
Well, one for one.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Far, definitely. Scott, I think we should get to a break.
We should.
But yo, you have something to say too. All right,
well,
go
I do
ahead.
Quickly, as long as we're on the topic of the lambic styles of Belgium and balanced beers, New Belgium, our friends at New Belgium, 2018 La Terroir is about to be released. So
what?
Dry hopped with whole cone, Le Amarillo.
Terroir? Le Terroir, right?
Did I say law?
Yeah.
No. Law Terrier's coming out, guys. And anyway, it's 100% naturally carved in the bottle. You guys, I'm sure, have had that beer. It's a perennial favorite, and it's coming out soon. Go to newbelgium.com, check your local shelves, and enjoy yourself some Law Terrier from New Belgium.
To be clear, it's not a favorite just of a perennial brewery. It's just everyone's favorite on an annual basis.
No, perennial told me that they like that beer, but they're pretty sure nobody else does. So, yeah. Perennial.
Love that beer. That beer inspired us to make one of our first beers. Like, I don't know, first 10 beers we ever made was a dry hop beer that was essentially just a clone of Le Terroir called Egregious.
Yes, I remember Egregious well. It was an Egregious ripoff.
Yep, it was. We already gave a shout-out to Mellow Mink. Maybe we can tease out a question brought to you by Sour Beer Blog and get to it after the break.
Well, speaking of whole cone hops, let's tease a whole cone hop question from Billy.
Oh, that's it?
Well, you want me to ask the question?
Yeah, and then the answer
I never
after
remember
the
how we do this. Okay. there's so many variations of our stupid teases.
Yeah. I don't really think that's a tease.
Well, the answer is teased out. Because then people think, if someone's listening live, they're like, oh, I wonder what
I mean, I guess so.
Yeah. How would you do it?
Well, you'd rather, like, well, no, I wonder what the question is.
I don't have any suggestions.
I just know this sucks.
You just want
to how to make it better. I just want to state that I think it's done.
You guys are doing a bad job.
Yeah, I don't
essentially,
know how to do it better, but
yes.
Yeah. All right.
Are you working on more information or not? No, you're reading a guidebook to New Orleans.
I already have completed my more information.
Yeah, that makes me think this is a biased investigation, but we'll get to that more after the break. This is the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
That was great.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months to the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer at Brew for Your Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
With the roughness, I'm through with the roughness.
Oh, we're back.
Oh, hello.
Distracted by beer. Back, it's the Sour Hour. Got Beechwood Blendery in the house.
In the house.
I was also distracted because Scott was just telling me about this great opportunity locally.
Here in Concord?
For brewers.
Yeah. In Concord. Yeah, hey guys, the city of Concord, our lovely home, of course, here at the Brewing Network Studios, it is the perfect place to start or expand your craft beer business. Of course, I can personally attest, we have the Earmuffs J, Hop Grenade, and also the Brewing Network
Studios. Not nearly enough time to earmuffs with headphones on.
Concord, guys, is centrally located in the Bay Area, which, of course, is going bananas economically. It's got really strong craft beer-loving demographics, and there's a historic downtown here, which is beautiful. That's where we're at. It's experiencing a boom. The industrial parks here are centrally located off major freeways, and they are perfect for large-scale brewery operations. So the city's economic development team is ready to help you find a successful location to meet your craft beer business needs. Give Brian Nunnally a call, 925-671-3018. He's ready to help you open up your business in Concord, 925-671-3018. Give Brian a call and give Concord a shot. You'll be happy you did.
Well read.
Thank you.
I mean,
what do you mean read?
Yeah. From the heart.
It really is. I mean, of all the, you know, we're here in Concord, man. I'm here to tell you.
There's good beer.
It's a good time.
There's good beer out here. And, you know, as evidence at the world headquarters
of the Brewing Network.
Pigerator.
That's the three-tap refrigerator conversion that we have here.
If Ryan Harrison didn't bring enough beer, there's also some beers available on draft.
Yeah, draft and bottles. Yeah. You guys brought it strong. Love it.
So in case we run out, which is not going to happen. Speaking of running out, you'll never run out of great BN content, you guys. Listen to the other BN shows. Brew Strong, Dr. Homebrew, Brewing with Style.
Shine Runner?
Heads. What?
There's a new one, right, Beef? Shine Runner is a new show?
What?
Do you have a brief description for us? No. I'm pretty sure it's a So you can see why you should listen to other BN shows. The staff here is on it.
God, that is so good. And Heads and Tails.
Yeah, and Heads and Tails. Yeah. Whatever. Go to the website.
And there's the new Spanish podcast, whose name I can't even say.
Okay.
Cervez something or other.
Cervantes?
Yeah, but we have a new it's on the website.
Maybe
we have a new podcast that is Spanish speaking.
Oh.
All about craft beer.
I knew that was coming.
Go to elnetworkdebrewing.com and check it out.
So maybe during the break we'll the BN employees in this building will look that up.
Meh.
Myself included. I guess kind of.
We're all in that sort of purgatory. Yeah,
kind of.
Do we work here? It's unclear.
All right. So before the break, we teased out, you know, basically the godfather, godmother of. We teased out the question too. I was going to do something else.
We did. Well, let's get through it quickly because
let's get the question.
Yeah, the question, which we never actually read the question. So
That was a mistake.
This is from Billy C. As you can see, we're all professionals, which is why we get paid, huh? What? This is from Billy C. I brewed my first sours. He says all grain rare barrel recipes, golden sour with imperial sour batch.
That's your first mistake.
and some dregs and red sour rose. Zolaire blend. Didn't realize it till the second brew, which was the red sour, but I sucked a couple of whole cone hops into the fermenters. It's been 3 days. Fermentation is rocking. Do I transfer primary into a new primary to get away from the hops?
No. Oh, absolutely.
So just ride it. He says, should I just ride it out? Sounds like yes.
Unless it's like a 1 liter batch.
Okay. So he said, well, so also, if it's cool to leave it alone, which it sounds like it is, and I want to use the yeast cake again, would it be a good idea to clean the yeast cake to drop the old hops out before the next beer gets pitched?
Don't freak out.
Don't do that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Billy.
Sorry. What do you guys think? I saw some similar shakings of the head, so.
Yeah, I think it would, as long as it's like a super small amount, it's not going to make any difference.
You're actually better off if you're using pellet hops and you... I'm going to say this in a non-explicit way. Pulled through some hop matter with the pellet hops, you probably would have gotten a lot more because it's such a finer particulate.
Oh, sure.
You just had a few whole cones. When you rack off of that, it's definitely going to stay behind. Whereas, you know, if you're using pellets, it's like
little floaties.
It's all mixed up in there.
Sure.
So, Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it.
For sure. Thanks for the question, Billy. Good luck.
And the other thing I was going to talk about is pre-break, we shouted out New Belgium, the godmothers of hoppy sour beer, I'll say. Mm-hmm. And now we have Beechwoods. Is this dry hopped with raspberries or just hoppy with raspberries?
So this is...
Is this a quote-unquote bitter beer, Ryan?
sure. All of our beer actually is a little bitter because we use a good amount of aged hops. And I think traditionally, Lambic and Goose in Belgium does have a certain level of bitterness. But this is a raspberry dry hopped beer.
It's so little secrets,
it's
by the way.
It's little secrets. And I'm going to give you all of the secrets. Maybe not all of them.
Just say them quietly.
Yeah. Secrets.
This is a really interesting
beer.
I'm going to lead off by saying we were talking about just blatantly copying people. Chad Jacobsman.
That's good.
Crooked Stave was at Beechwood for an event, and he brought a batch. I think it was called like Batch 200 I forget the exact name, but it's a raspberry dry hopped beer. I think it was like a year or two old, actually, when we had it. But I was just blown away by it. I was like, this is really cool combination. This is a good beer. Why aren't more people experimenting with this? I'm gonna start like figuring this out and playing with it. So yeah, so this beer starts out as a blend of 1-year-old lambic inspired base beer. We age it on frozen whole raspberries for 2 months. And then we send it to a fermenter where we dry hopped with Mosaic, just kind of your standard dry hopping techniques, like you're dry hopping an IPA, just the pellets in the top, 1 pound per barrel for a week. And yeah, I think it's just really cool. There's a lot of cool things you get with funky sour beer and dry hops, because you have the Brett doing cool things with the hop compounds. You also have the Brett cleaning up oxygen, so it makes it last a long time and stays really bright and tastes really fresh for a long time. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of cool things, I think, with the hops and the fruit and the Brett all combining. So this is an avenue we're really like starting to play around with a lot. And I think this is like one of the most unique and interesting beers that we do. I'm really happy with it.
I think it's wonderful. And, you know, I think when people start to consider styles like this and they're like, okay, sour, fruit beer, hops, it starts to build a little bit of a pattern where it's like, wait a minute. Is this just like smashing all of the styles up, basically? But that's not what this is. This is very, it's a beautiful beer. It's subtle. It makes sense together. And it is not like a smash up of three different styles. It's like, this is a beer on its own, and it's very good. I'm really intrigued by the fruit and hop commingling in sour beers, because I just think you can produce awesome flavors. Those fruity flavors in the base, Saccharomyces, Brettanomyces, and bacteria in sour beer is obviously fruity. That's my personal opinion. Pause for laughter. Thank you. Thanks, Bevo. she looked at she. I wish the camera picked that up, because she picked up her phone, saw what time it was, and then shook her head.
Yeah. With the sternest, no expression look. It's just like dead inside.
God damn it.
That's just how my face looks.
RBF.
So there's that. And then, you know, obviously like the fruitiness of hops as well. And they're all going the same direction. And I also believe in the oxygen scrubbing and the preservative factor of Brett with hops. But let me pose this to the both of you. One thing I've been noticing in my own beers and then in other people's beers, sour beers, let's limit it to, I think dry hopping them is great. But one thing that came up in the Creature Comfort show was they had a big, what I would call a hoppy beer, which got tons of hops in the whirlpool, tons of dry hops in like an initial fermentation, and then sent to barrels. And it almost like seemed hoppier than a beer that you would bring back and dry hop. And I've found almost the same thing of rare barrel beers. But have you guys done kind of more hopping, either hot side or upfront cold side, that you let age out versus kind of a dry hop right before packaging? Or what's your experience with that kind of scenario?
We've never experimented with hops like on the hot side that weren't like the aged hops.
But you are doing it. So what are you bittering to with your or just what's your pound per barrel with the aged hops? You said you use those a lot.
It's anywhere from a half pound barrel to like 0.8 pounds per barrel.
Okay.
So on the higher side, I would say we're getting typically like 30 IBUs in the finished beer, mm-hmm. which is pretty high. I mean, considering these hops have been sitting in that yeah. for 3 years and they smell and look wonderful, you know? And I think the hop thing in bread is like, it's super beautiful. Like, we tasted some beers yesterday at Almanac where they did use like Mosaic, and like, it does come across like it does in the dry hop, but it's happening in the barrels during fermentation. Like, it comes across really hoppy and mm-hmm. just super nice. I think the other cool thing is like, I mean, we dry hop these beers and they sit warm at like 76 for 3 months, right? Like, you would never do that to IPA. You would destroy the beer and mm-hmm. then look how it's tasting now. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So what is the key difference? Like, IPA is destroyed and this isn't because?
I mean, it's got to be a thing with Brett. I mean, whether it's oxygen or they're doing things over time with the hop compounds. I mean, I don't have the science to prove anything, but I think, you know, just from sensory, like, it's obvious it's doing something.
I would add acid to that. So we're talking about two different preservative factors. One is in oxygen, essentially scavenging yeast, wild yeast, and that degrades the hops or the hop compounds. And then the other being acidity, which is, you know, obviously a natural preservative across the board of food and beverages. But there's also a lot going on. That's maybe about strictly preservative things, but we're also talking about creating new flavors or just, even if it's not new, different, but equal. It's just a different sense. It's still hoppy, but it's like, man, this is...
Yeah, just, I think the term is not. Like biotransformation. So there's actually... Brett will actually work on some of the compounds in the hops and transform them into new compounds. And you definitely, just in like a pure, funky, sour, dry hop beer, you get a lot of like fruitiness. Like even more so than just like a dry hopped beer without that. So I think they're definitely, the Brett is doing these biotransformations on the hops and creating some new compounds and making them even more fruity and continuing to do that over a long period of time. So if you could, I think we should maybe experiment with some fruity, fresher hops at Whirlpool maybe and see how it ages over the course of a year during fermentation in the barrels.
Seems totally counterintuitive, which is why I think it took us so long to kind of get into that. But we've seen a lot of really good results. Like, it just stays there. It's almost like the earlier we add the hops, the better off we are. Kind of, you know, again, counterintuitively.
Yeah.
But we try to dry hop at IPA rates, bringing beers back to the cellar. And it's certainly quite hoppy, but I mean, nowhere close to how hoppy it should be, I guess, based off of like regular beer. How heavily did you hop this beer when you brought it back?
1 pound per barrel. So maybe a little less to like half the amount of just your like standard IPA.
Mm-hmm.
We have had in the past dry hopped at rates around like 1.5 pounds per barrel or even a little higher, and definitely noticed that it was overly hoppy to the point where it actually drowned out the base beer or the other flavors. I think I feel like you need less hops when you're doing dry hopping in the funky sour beers, actually.
That's an interesting point because we use S-ton of hops when we dry hop our beers.
Scotia Salt and an S-ton of hops.
It's the hot new podcast. S-ton. Nailed it.
Nice.
Hey, Bevo, didn't she laugh at that?
No. I don't know. She might not even know the reference. Guidebook.
Yeah.
I don't think she's listening.
She's not. You're not listening. She's not listening
at all.
Literally, I would have no idea. I was just talking about Bourbon Street with Kevin.
There you go.
No clue what you're talking about.
That's the street that you're not allowed to drink on.
That's the street that I was told to wear clothes-toed shoes on.
Mostly for the vomit. Okay, so moving past that. But yeah, there's all sorts of like contradictions and counter intuition when it comes to hops and sour beers. So it's fun to have that like open discussion. But yeah, we dry hop, again, the S out of our beers at the Rare Barrel when we bring it back in. And I'm always kind of like, I mean, they taste good, but I'm always like, how many hops per barrel do we add to this? And I'll be like, 3 pounds, 4 pounds per barrel.
And you keep saying, like, it should be
triple,
more.
Triple, so quadruple, like, what's in this beer.
Because you, okay, well, are you...
Is I'm your, like, what? We might as well just throw them in the trash. Like, where did they go?
They're not, they're,
where
they're
did
not,
they go?
They didn't come out in this beer. So are you trying to have, like, a noticeable, like, oh, this beer, this is a dry hop sour. And I say that because this beer, if I didn't know that it was dry hopped, I don't know, I would just pick this as a raspberry sour, because the hop flavor and the raspberry flavor are so seamlessly integrated that it doesn't jump out to me as hops. But maybe you're saying, Jay, like, when you're doing your dry hop sours, you're really trying to, like, showcase the hops, and you're like, how do you do that?
Yeah, or we're just looking for a transformation that is significant, but yeah, it always ends up being, like, well integrated in, like, a disappointing way.
Right, because that's what I'm saying, you don't necessarily want it to be. So maybe your guys' goals were a little different. Was your Beachwood guys, was your goal to have it almost be not noticeable, but there, but seamless?
Definitely seamless. I think balancing all things is, like, a good thing to strive for in our beers, or that's what we strive for anyway. We found a lot of variation in hop varieties, though. We have a series of beers where we do dry hop with different varieties each time, and we found that a lot of the varieties kind of come across as, like, the same flavor, and a few of them have, like, really unique qualities in our beers.
Let's hear your names and names.
Mandarina Bavaria is really beautiful. I'm really, like, awesome. We do that with nectarines, and super awesome beer. Floating in Space, that's the name of the beer. It'll be out soon.
Heard it here first. Breaking news.
Exclusive.
Heal Melon, super rad. It's exactly how it sounds. It's super melony and just sweet and refreshing. I don't know if that's a flavor, but that's how I would describe it. Mosaic is the hop that's in this beer, and it's awesome across the board. We've used it a bunch of times, and I think it's one of our favorites, just from an intensity standpoint and just overall, like, balance of, like, fruitiness and, like, hop qualities.
What about, how old is this beer, and how has it changed since, you know, you were initially trying it, either during or right after packaging, and what it's like today?
I can look that up right now.
Yeah, I'm
roughly.
It's on the
10,000 years.
It was
100 years
in April, so it's okay. Been 4 months in the bottle, and okay. Yeah, I think with the dry hopped beers, they're definitely, like, ready to drink and good to go when we release them. I think they do kind of reach a point where they aren't getting better, and maybe even the hop quality starts to change and, like, diminishes a little bit, maybe at about a year old. Mm-hmm. So I definitely recommend drinking our dry hopped sour beers under a year old. Not really, like, the prime candidate for aging.
Gotcha.
Can I do one final point on this beer? As it
no.
compare, okay, moving along.
No, go.
As it compares to the first beer we drank, which had the salt and had that really complex mouthfeel, you know, this beer is markedly different in the mouthfeel category, and I'm going to use a word that sounds bad, but it isn't. It's thinner than the last beer. This beer is not thin at all. This beer is complex and delicious. But as compared to the mouthfeel of the first beer, I don't know how else to say it. I know it sounds bad. I don't mean it that way. Do you think that's just the salt that's doing that?
Yeah, I definitely agree that I think the last one had a little more mouthfeel. I think the salt probably plays into that. It also, we strive for consistency as far as quality goes at the blendery, but having every beer taste exactly the same or every barrel taste exactly the same is not something we strive for. So there's a lot of barrel variation. There's a lot of batch variation. So I think that could play into it too. The Umibashi, that batch we used, could have just had some barrels that just had a lot of mouthfeel or maybe a little more residual sugar. And it could just have to do with the fruit re-fermentation too. So the raspberries could have just, like, really got ripping, and the yeast could have got a little more active and just chewed through a little more of that unfermentable or slightly unfermentable sugar. But yeah, I think the salt does play into the body of the Umibashi though, definitely.
Yeah, I think so for sure. We're actually going from the first beer we had, the beer we're having right now, and probably the next beer we're about to have, lower on the mouthfeel ladder as we go.
Okay.
That's just a guess. But, you know, you take a beer that's got aged hops and no fruit added to it, that's going to feel drier than hoppy fruited. And then I think salt is that's an enormous game changer when it comes to mouthfeel, for sure. It's up there with, like, something like vanilla or, yeah, you know, maybe one of the, like, slicker kind of stone fruit beers like peach or something like that, kind of much fuller mouthfeel. But like they were saying, the base is all the same.
Yeah.
So Well, there are, you know, what you're saying, Ryan, the barrel-to-barrel differences. From an outside perspective, I'd probably attribute most of it to the ingredients so far.
For sure. And when this beer is, I experience this as really dry as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also like a tannic nature of raspberries.
Right.
And, you know, maybe a little more acidity on this one.
Yeah.
Although both are just really, like you're talking about, the balance and drinkability is spot on. So well done on that.
Absolutely. Terrific beer.
Cool. Break time?
Yes.
This might be a 4-hour show. Before we get there, if you want balanced drinkability and fruit mouthfeel, talk to our friends at Oregon Fruit Products, Scott.
Yeah?
Aseptic purees. They're easy to use. Convenient. I thought you were going to continue to make sounds.
No.
They're convenient to store.
Mm-hmm.
No additives.
Mm-hmm.
Artificial flavors.
Mm.
Simply great expression of the raw fruit.
Mm-hmm.
They love working.
Hmm?
Brewers.
Oh, brewers.
They also just love working. They'll help you innovate. Check them out. Fruit4brewing.com. Oregon Fruit. They bring fruit.
L'chaim.
All right. We'll take a break. But before we do, we have a very special beer next.
Which one?
The coup de grace beer.
Ooh.
The beer we really want to, we've been waiting to open, and you'll listen to us drink that after the break. We'll be right back on the Sour Hour.
Hi, this is Ryan Wheaton, the host of a new podcast called Branding Brews. Branding Brews is a show focused on marketing, branding, and design for the beer industry. I have spent over 14 years as a professional designer. As a host, I bring my knowledge to the show to interview other great beer professionals. Whether you're thinking about starting a brewery, already own a brewery, want to learn more about marketing beer, or you're a seasoned veteran, this show is for you. This show will cover topics such as rebranding a brewery, package and label design, crowdfunding, design, social media, plus much more related to promoting and creating a great beer brand. Make sure to check out the show along with useful show notes at brandingbrews.com. You can also subscribe to the Branding Brews podcast in iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Again, check us out at brandingbrews.com.
This is Mike Tonsmeyer, the Mad Fermentationist. You're listening to The Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
I saw you space that out, Scott. Well done.
Thank you. You're
is
welcome.
This from the review recently?
This might have been the Instagram comment, Maps and Atlases.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this one. I remember liking this.
It makes sense for a crew that really likes...
this is my jam.
What is the that Mike really liked that he kept making me play when he was in studio? Like the sort of Brit rock song from the 80s that you guys listened to on a freaking loop at the Rare Barrel?
Describes so many different songs.
Oh, God. I'm blanking. I'll
West End
it.
Girls?
West End Girls! In a West End restaurant. What was that?
Spot on. All right. We're back. Lots to get to here in our final segment of show one with Beechwood Blendery. I want to thank some people who are bringing you this show. Wine and Hop Shop, wineandhop.com, locally owned and operated for over 40 years. Most items are going to ship within 24 hours. BN listeners get a flat $8 shipping rate on orders under 25 pounds and are BN shipping in the notes field, and also thank them for us. Of the shopping cart, discount's going to be taken off after checkout. Madison, Wisconsin residents. Hmm. Order your homebrew supplies online at wineandhop.com. Pick them up at Working Draft Beer Company.
That's right. Kaboom. A new brewery.
Located on Wilson Street. You know where it is. Right across from Central Park.
Isn't it West End Street?
Is it?
Don't shake your head at me, Beeb. This song is awesome. You guys turned me on to it.
We'll waive the shipping and give you half off your first beer. Working Draft Beer Company, Madison, Wisconsin, wineandhopshop.com. This one goes out to Bevo.
West End Girls. So good.
It's funny because, you know, I just wanted to thank a lot of my friends right here off the top of this segment.
Yeah.
And literally
in a restaurant
during the break, Scott's like, hey, when you thank our good friends, I dip.
Yeah,
we don't
no
have
song.
Time.
No.
We don't have time to play this
There's
song.
There's no time, Jay. There's no time. Now everyone quiet down so we can listen to the rest of this song.
I dip. It's a homework commercial you spotted.
I dip here. Boys and I dip girls.
I dip testing kit. Can perform over 40 water quality tests. Things like chloride, calcium hardness, pH, sulfite, and much more.
Do you dip?
Gotta recover. Early meltdown.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry, I did. We love you.
I can't. You have to take out the music.
Okay. Love it. Where should people go to find iDip?
Podcast listeners should enter code TPN10.
Enter the code.
At checkout and save $10 on either the standard or advanced smart brew testing kit. Order now and make this futuristic technology part of your brewing
process.
Visit www.westendgirls.com.
Yeah.
No, smartbrewkit.com. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, boy.
All right.
That was
just hold the baby. Let's hold it together.
Let's open a beer.
Yes, please. That's what
we
need.
Wow. That was tough.
We need Beechwood Blendery beers. Stat.
Are we still on the air or did we get canceled yet?
That's unclear.
All right.
Boom.
Ryan Harrison, tell us what is going on with this beer. Save me for myself.
Yes, please.
This beer.
Oh, wait. Try again.
Yep. This beer is entitled Funk Yeah.
Nice.
And
hand labeled, yet to be released?
Yet gorgeous. To be released. This is our first blend of 1, 2, and 3-year-old lambic inspired barrels.
Oh,
so we
man.
Would call
no,
it
that's a name.
Hughes inspired
oh.
beer.
Oh, okay. Inspired.
I think you guys are trying it first.
This is awesome.
So this is a sneak peek. We're going to be.
Are we the first outside of the brewery
yes.
people to do?
Thanks,
we are
guys.
Going to be.
I'm going to try it first,
a
Scott.
Party to celebrate the release soon. Mm-hmm. Check our social medias and website to stay updated on that. Yeah,
beautiful.
Cheers, guys.
Got some bad
cheers.
News. It's super
Thanks,
good.
Guys. All right. Yeah. All right.
Yes.
Boom.
Cheers to 3 years. Well, this is wonderful. I'll try to describe it. I think to me, there's a lot of the like. Classic cedar cigar box thing I get.
Absolutely. It's a goose.
A lot of times. Well, excuse you? It's inspired.
It's a goose. And it's inspired by...
you can say it tastes like goose.
It tastes like goose. It's not... Yeah. Yes, yes. So.
And I love the light acid. I think it's... What is that? A 500 ml bottle?
Yeah.
That, you know, I could just pop that open and drink it by myself for sure. Easily. And wonderful.
I'm really happy with it. I think
it's terrific.
In a lot of our beers, when we started, we were really paranoid about acetic acid and ethyl acetate. And we realized that there is a certain amount of acetic acid you need in these beers for just the certain, just to get the right kind of sourness, I guess. Lactic acid really hits you up in the front of the mouth and it mm-hmm. finishes really quick. And when you have the right amount of acetic acid, it really lets the acidity linger over your whole palate. And it's kind of almost like, the salt thing where the acetic is to acidity like salt would be to food or something. I think it lets the acidity linger and kind of gives it a full acidity.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you get past a certain threshold, it turns into tastes like vinegar or nail polish remover if it's converted to ethyl acetate. So I think with this beer, blending in that 3-year-old beer, which was definitely more of the acetic component, definitely adds to the acidity and kind of the overall complexity and structure of the beer in a good way. I think it has a lot of like really good funk characteristics, which is what we're mainly going for, is like really funk forward beer, especially with this when we're trying to recreate a goose or the flavors found in goose. They're definitely funk driven beers. Yeah, I'm really happy with it. I think we definitely handpicked some of the best barrels in our program for it.
you can taste that. I mean, there's really only a couple come to my mind immediately of like goose, sharp, exact goose. Like Cantillon Classic Goose has this. Drefontaine and Goose has this. Mm-hmm. It's a short list. I mean, nothing else like immediately is rolling off of my tongue. Goose. I know it's not a goose, right? It's inspired. I know. I understand. But this is
no.
Really
I'm saying that. No, that's high. I'm saying that's high praise.
It is.
You're saying, hey, let's get some what we call industry term liners from these guys before we leave. Saying like, hey, this is Ryan. We're on the Sour Hour. Sour Hour is awesome. But you guys should grab that liner from Scott, where he just like, you know, I think of Cantillon, Drefontaine. Beechwood Blendery.
It's a very short list, guys. So, like, this is absolutely astoundingly fantastic.
So our goal when we started this project, Gabe, the owner, one of the founders of Beechwood, used to be one of the people back in the day that would just be buying tons of beer from Belgium, tons of like of Lambic and Goose that was being sent over.
Santa Barbara kid.
And,
that's right, 805, baby.
Used to be really pretty readily accessible because people in America weren't really into it or didn't really know what it was at that point. But as time went on, it got more popular. The supply didn't really increase of beer getting sent over from there, and it just started getting really hard to get because everyone was trying to get Cantillon Goose on their shelf or in their bottle shop. So Gabe's thought was, you know what, if it's so much harder to get these days, then I think the only way we're going to be able to drink a lot of this type of beer is to try to recreate it ourselves. So
absolutely.
That was kind of one of the big motivations, I think, behind him starting
Gabe wants
Blendery.
To drink.
That's wants to. Yeah. And he's patient. 3 years from now, I'm going to be having this maybe.
Yep. Yeah. Well, chef by nature, so. True. I mean, even the stuff that he makes that takes a long time, it's like, what, one day? Big deal.
Totally. Yeah. Well, there's no substitute for time, right? To try and create something along these goozy lines.
Yeah, I mean, patience is essential when you're doing this kind of project, and it's something that you can't rush, and you really have to dedicate a lot of time. It's nice to have a good amount of barrels to pick from too. It's hard to like get it right on one barrel. So, yeah, dedicating time and energy and having a lot of barrels to work with. And we've just been really adapting over time, too. It's not something that it's hard to just come out of the gates right away and have the culture you're using or the method you're using work exactly. So this whole time that we've been doing this, we've been collecting data and trying to adapt our methods to get closer to our end goal, which is to create beer with flavors and aromas like Lambic and Goose. And really, for us, the ends justifies the means. So whatever method gets us closer to that goal is what we're going to use. We do think that starting out with traditional methods in mind is the best place to start, because the Belgians do it. We're probably going to at least try it and see if it gets us closer to that goal. So we definitely use a lot of traditional methods, but if there's a traditional method that we deem kind of unnecessary or not getting us closer to a goal, we're not necessarily going to keep doing it just to be traditional. We do have some beers that fall into the method traditional guidelines, and we've been doing some spontaneous fermentation and some turbid mashing. And I think that is a really cool thing. And it's really cool to have a beer that's made 100% in like the traditional methods in mind. But our primary beer on the shelf is just made with whatever method we can use that's going to get us closer to our goal. So whether that's pitching a house culture or just doing a single infusion mash at a really high temperature, we're going to do whatever it takes to do that. So back to what I was saying with the just getting closer to our goal, we started collecting data. I just recently conglomerated it all together and wrote a little paper that kind of just is a way for us to share our data and kind of share our story and hopefully get people excited about this beer and kind of where we're at now, because we talked a lot about where we wanted to be before we opened, but it takes 3.5 years to get to this point. So we want to remind people what we were telling you when we opened, you know, this is what we're doing, and like it takes a long time. And so the paper is this conglomeration of data. It's three main sections. The first section is right before we opened, the Shelton Brothers did a festival in Long Beach, and Jean Van Roy happened to come by the brewery and just kind of on a whim, and Gabe just kind of asked them, hey, can we throw some temperature recorders in your brewery? And he was like, yeah, sure, send them over. So we sent him these two recorders that record temperature and humidity every hour. He set them up in Brasserie Cantillon. And we have an entire year worth of temperature data from Cantillon Brewery, which is really, our thought was that the environment in which the barrels are aging is a key element to making these beers, right?
Like, they just said yes and then threw it in the freezer. They didn't tell them.
Yeah, right?
Man, it's cold in Brussels.
So yeah, the environment's super important, we think. So having the right fluctuation and kind of the, I think the day-to-day temperature might not be that important. And there was actually a lot less fluctuation on a day-to-day basis than we thought there would be. But I think just the overall general kind of like seasonal changes and how cold it's actually getting in there and how warm it's actually getting in there and kind of some of the temperature min and max and kind of this general curve, we thought would be really good information to have. So we shared that in the paper and definitely use it in our process.
For people who are like me and they're like, oh, hey, I want to learn all about that. Where did they get this paper?
You can go to our website, beechwoodbbq.com, and click on the blendery. And then it's in our blog on
gotcha.
There. Yeah.
So you guys, said, cool. You guys said you were really selective in the barrels that you chose to make this blend to be this goozy beer. What was your criteria?
So for the longer term aging, we've actually been using puncheons. They have... they actually use a lot of, they're basically double the size of a standard barrel. So around 130 gallons usually. Those are typically used over in Belgium. There's less surface area to volume ratio than your standard French oak wine barrel. So you're going to get less oak pickup over a long period of time. So our thought, we didn't have the ability to have all puncheons. I probably would have done that if we could have, but logistically it made more sense for us to have neutral French oak wine barrels to standard size. But we do have some puncheons, and I've been using that for the three-year-old beer because there's the less wood contact. So we picked some barrels from that for the three-year blend, and then the two-year-old stuff, we'll just find barrels when we're tasting through one-year-old beer when we're blending, and if we find a barrel that we think is going to age really well, and we'll just mark it for holding for another extra year. So we have some stuff to blend with when we're going to blend this beer. And then we always have a constant supply of one-year-old beer available. So we just pick some of the best barrels from that.
And you mentioned earlier, you know, sort of needing some level of an acetic acid character to it. I should say for the people listening, you know, from beers that I have regularly, I would say there's no perception of acetic acid in this. I think people have a misconception of acetic acid where, oh, they know it can be an off flavor in sour beer, but that's really only in excess. And all sour beers have acetic acid in them. It's just, you know, how do you measure that? What's your threshold? Does it contribute like a complexity, it's a lot like citric acid to me, like a citric pop to the beer. Does it pop the carbonation a little bit? Or is it vinegar? Is it burning your throat? There's a huge gap between the two. But I just wanted to point out that, number one, this beer does not have that heat, that burn, that vinegar. It just, if you didn't even point that out, I wouldn't even have said like, oh, you know, and I get like a tiny just splash of like the salt kind of component that we're talking about, where it's like, oh, the acetic really brightens this up. That's, you know.
Yeah. So going back to the paper, we actually, the part of the data we collected was also bottle analysis. We did three separate runs. So we were actually able to get some bottles analyzed and then make some tweaks. And then like a year later, actually test some more bottles and see if our tweaks actually made a difference. But part of that was testing some bottles of traditional Belgian goose and then also having this bottle tested. And I wrap up the paper at the very end with a chart where it kind of compares this beer and on like a compositional level with this bottle analysis data to the traditional bottles of Belgian goose that we had tested. Interestingly enough, this actually had the highest level of acetic acid of all of the beers, but it had one of the lowest levels of ethyl acetate, which is what acetic acid converts into in the presence of Brettanomyces, and that's the kind of the solvent nail polish remover. So I think maybe because the ethyl acetate's so low, the acetic acid, and it's just pure acetic acid, then it gives it, there's like that nice acidity, but it's not like punishing or harsh right. in any way.
That's super interesting. Yeah. I know, and there's some, I'll say, strains or mutations of strains that come from Belgium where those Brettanomyces have been shown through other people's research that they produce higher levels of acetic acid and ethyl acetate, which is just something that, you know, the more research we can get into that, the better. Of course, we can all try to be trained with sensory, but to be frank, things from person to person and the methods you train yourself on are very up and down. So which is why I wanted to make the distinction there about acetic acid, because I think a lot of people think about that and they think it's one thing. In my opinion, I hear a lot of people talk about that, and what I immediately translate that into my mind is very sour. Doesn't matter if it's all lactic, not all, it's never all, but very lactic beer, someone drinks it, they're like, oh, this is very sour, must be acetic. Hmm. When in reality, it's like, that's not, it's like a 10 to 1 ratio, when maybe a normal beer is 3, 4, 5 to 1 of lactic to acetic acid.
Yeah, it's definitely important to have all the different acids and have them in kind of the right spec, because, yeah, if any one of them is way too much, yeah, it's going to be too much. And I think I agree. I think education about acetic acid and ethyl acetate, and just get, like, the more information people have about that and how to analyze that, I think is important, because they are necessary for the style. But oftentimes in America, you'll get beers with really high levels of both. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's not necessarily a flaw. Like, in certain styles, it's definitely appropriate. But I think it's good just for people to know what it is and be able to pick them out. And for us, we definitely like restrained levels of both those compounds.
Speaking of restrained levels, Bevo, can you tell Kevin to keep it down back there? Because it sounds like a wailing manatee.
Tell me about it.
Tell him about it.
Also, Beef, turn your mic on so we can hear how loud Kevin is.
Let's hear what he's saying.
Personal conversation.
Oh, is it?
About the company.
On the bar. Is it time for more information with Beverly Moore?
No wonder there's yelling. And it is time for more information with Beverly Moore.
Maybe not while Kevin's on the phone.
Well, you can come out here.
No, I can't, because I have to read it from my computer.
All right.
And it has to stay plugged in for the cameras to work.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to think while we're waiting for more information. I'm going to thank American Home Brewers Association.
Oh, AHA.
I'm going to thank them just in general, in like a year-round basis.
Yes.
Sorry, I just read that part too. this episode of Sour Hour brought to you by the American Home Brewers Association, a community of more than, 45,000 individuals?
Wow.
Is that true? Must be. I mean, they wrote it. I mean, I'm saying it. Who share a common passion, beer. That's true.
Beer.
So that's true. Since 1978, the AHA has promoted and advanced the most delicious hobby in the world, providing, I don't know, chocolate eating? That's pretty good, too.
It's a delicious
Sorry,
one, yeah.
I'm just ad-libbing here. Providing brewing resources, supporting homebrewer-friendly legislation, offering exclusive member deals at breweries and homebrew shops, and hosting one-of-a-kind events like HomebrewCon, which I was just at.
That's right.
Awesome.
How'd your taco, by the way?
I killed it.
Mistakes in sour beer making.
Yeah, standing ovation before and after.
Totally. Extended standing ovation,
many interruptions for just, yeah.
The first person to stop clapping disappears.
People were doing the wave. It was great.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Dodger Stadium. And the National Homebrew Competition. Join your beer-loving peers at homebrewersassociation.org.
There you go.
And our friends from Neshaminy Creek, Scott.
Yes.
That's what you were talking about. They did not send us some beer, but the Royal Us.
Yeah. Well, specifically not us. He did send us the one or two sour beers, but all the rest of this stuff, I think he not only included a note in there, but also like emailed me and was like, that is not for Scott. That is for the session. Do not drink that, you jerk. Don't worry, I didn't.
Well, that's messed up. But anyway, yes. They are the three-time Philly Beer Scene Magazine Brewer of the Year, two-time JBF Vienna-style lager medal winner, two times for a bronze smoke lager, as predicted here. Renovated taste room with a variety of beer styles. You know the styles, especially poundable lagers, sour beers, free brewery tours on Saturdays, new second location opening. at least 6 years ago. Check them out. NishamineCreekBrewing.com. Got it.
Are we ready for this?
And now, more information with me, Beverly Moore.
Neil Diamond. Did he write Red Wine or perform?
Red Wine.
He wrote and performed Red, Red Wine.
It was his song originally?
Is it UB40?
Originally.
Or
no.
Someone else.
Yeah, UB40 covered it. Yeah. Theirs has been the most successful cover. And to the point where when Neil Diamond sings this song at his own concerts, he tends to use their version as opposed to his own.
Sure.
I wonder if he does the, like, red, red one.
Yeah, man. Well, and UB40.
Sweet red wine.
Exactly, that's it.
Well, and UB40's only hit was Red Wine, wasn't it? That's their magnum opus and when they have concerts. Didn't Justin go to a UB40 concert and everyone was like, play
did.
Red Wine?
Yeah.
Not even theirs.
Yeah.
That's
we love
so
Neil
funny.
Diamond.
Yeah.
Wait, do we have a version from Neil Diamond?
I'm sure you can find it.
While you're looking that up, an analogous situation to this is The Verve, Bittersweet Symphony, written by?
Yes.
Their only hit, written by The Rolling Stones.
Is that right? I did not know that either.
Straight up.
That's a staple.
More information with Jake.
that was like a staple of modern rock radio and movie soundtracks
great
in the 90s.
Too.
Yeah, great song.
Yeah, what was it on? Cruel Intentions?
Yes.
Nailed
That's
it.
That's right. This is Red Wine by Neil Diamond.
Red, red wine.
Oh my God.
Sing now.
It's up to you.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
All I can do, I've done.
Well done, Beva.
Are there any Beechwood Blendery beers coming up that have some red wine characteristics?
Whoa, teaser.
I'm just trying to
a little secret.
I'm just trying to tie this nonsense into the content of the show here. All right, so there you go. More information with Beav. Red Wine, in fact, a Neil Diamond song.
Well done. One of the better, more informations that we've had.
One of the only.
Do we close that out with that sound or no? I'm giving you so many
with
sound
that sound.
Keys. No, we're closing out the show.
Yeah. Same time?
No, that's all. Thanks, Bevo. For more information, thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Thanks to the boys from Beechwood Blendery. Great beers. We're going to keep going into the next show.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you to all the sponsors and to all you listeners. Until next time, stay sour.
The Brewing Network. In a restaurant.